έχει πέρασει από ένα ρόπτερ κατρίκο, σαν σπότιν τελικά κατρίκο South Africa, as agreed last week that they will take us through the process that we are going to be engaging in today. I hope, I'm sure the state law advisors are here, and also the legal advice from Parliament is here. When the acting director general and his team are finished, we will request the state law advisors and the advisors of Parliament to also engage with us on what are the legalities and issues that we have. This portfolio committee should be able to look into as we take the processes forward. Acting DG, it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, and good morning to Honorable members and colleagues. Honorable Chair and members, we have come here today as agreed to talk to the comments and input made during the hearings. Like we did last week, the colleagues, the team, the experts would deal substantively with all the issues that were raised in the meeting. One just want to just talk to the process in a minute or two. Chair, this is the bill, amendment bill that has gone through due process, at least within government. Before it came to Parliament, we want to believe that it was consulted widely and extensively. We discussed with our peers and stakeholders and interested parties when the bill was at the initial draft stages. We went to cabinet to request to formally gazette and go out for more comments. We considered the comments and incorporated them. We went through the cluster system of government, further the JCPS cluster, the cabinet committee, JCPS also, and then cabinet then ultimately approved and allowed us to come to Parliament. We also had the from the DPME, there is a process for the socio-economic impact. But also, along the way, we got certification from state law advisors. So the state law advisors, I'm informed that even this presentation that we are going to talk to, collaboration was done or happened between ourselves, our team, and the state law advisors, just to make sure that we cross the correct T's and dot the right dots. I would not want to waste the committee's time. I want to believe that substantively there were three major issues that came. One of them was the constitutionality of the bill. Two was the legal standing of using electronic mail in the mail. But also the other issue was then participation. I don't know, participation in the teams then we deal with the, because we did some work and then we would want the committee to be taken in confidence that we are on the right path. Having said that, Mr. Chu, as usual, will take us through the issues raised during the course of last week. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Sir President.
Just a moment, Honorable Sumander.
I'm sorry, Sir President. I wanted to request it to you that you repeat the three things you mentioned about the potential constitutionality and the two you mentioned, which we are challenging.
Budget.
Thank you, Chairperson. Like we are saying, the issue that came very prominent last week were basically three, not that the others are not dealt with, but special attention has to be given to the constitutionality of the bill itself, the issue around the policy alteram per term in relation to implementation of the bill for the Senate. And the other issue was the legality of using electronic media in this instance, emails. And as indicated, that work has been done in that regard, including evidence, more especially the issue around electronic mailing. Evidence in the form of decided cases. Thank you, John.
Mr. Chiwe, you can continue. I hope Honorable Sibande has got a very key component that we are highlighted by the CD.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to your Honorable Self, to the Honorable Members of the Committee, the Acting Director General, Mr. Matate, to my colleagues from the Department and the RTO and other stakeholders. I'm informed that the starting time was delayed. I have to profusely offer my apology, Chairperson. Due to other urgent things that I had to do with that delayed me this morning. So I truly apologize to the committee. It is not disrespectful, but I had to take care of other things. Thank you very much for indulging us in this. There are two presentations that will be in order, Chairperson, in this instance. If just for a reminder, we had tabled this presentation last week. In respect of the submissions, we've indicated that there are two types of submissions that we had to respond to. Firstly, in respect of the written submissions, and some of the written submissions were ultimately followed up by oral presentation that this Honorable Committee had invited members to be able to make further input on that. If there is any further questions in relation to that, fortunately we do have both presentations. The first one that was done, Chairperson, tailing 44 slides last week, and in respect of the oral presentations, touching on some of the elementary issues that would have been mentioned. So this one we're going to go through 32 slides. As has been indicated, the submissions that were made by Alta Swanepoel, by TASIMA, by CANCOM, by SALGA, and by GPSA, as well as SA Taxi, in as much as they would have submitted written input, we were dealing with them now in respect of consolidating the written input as well as the oral presentations that are making. At the very beginning, the first four slides, I'm not going to go into detail, save to say that it actually consolidates the responses that we make in reminding us of the intention in respect of the provisions that are incorporated in the amendment bill. Allow me, Chairperson, to indicate that in respect of the input that we're considering, there's a number of other clauses that have been taken and nobody had made any other comments, neither yea nor refuting them. And in this respect, we're taking it that there is no contentious issues in respect of those. So the first presentation, which relates to the written submission and the first oral presentation by Ms. Alta Swanepoel from Alta Swanepoel and Associates, we will cover the basic tenets of what was covered in respect of that oral presentation. The first part is to make mention of the amendment to the definition of issuing authority to include any other authority that has been prescribed by the Minister. In this respect, if one looks at Section 1 of the Act or Act in itself, it makes a number of other aspects of the definition of issuing authorities, including the Road Traffic Management Corporation being an issuing authority. The proposal that has been made in respect of the Amendment Bill was to then include other authorities here, and the proposal that Ms. Swanepoel was making is it is not necessary to provide detail in respect or the definition of those issuing authorities, but safe to say that in terms of Section 34, the minister would then be empowered by regulation to pronounce on the addition of any other issuing authorities. Second part was to amend the definition of infringement. We extended to allow for infringement in terms of the National Land Transport Act, the Cross-Border Road Transport Act, and all other national road transport legislation. In this respect, one would be aware that even the definition of ARTO in itself is specifically limited to road traffic. And in this respect, in order for us to be able to make it more effective, she proposes that we include not only road traffic but road transport legislation, so that from a law enforcement point of view, there will be the related deficiencies in that respect. Proposing also the inclusion of the definition of registered mail in the definition section, it is a reliance that one goes on to the South African Postal Services Act itself, and here, in order to allay any fears and to make the related authoritative definition, it would be wise to include the definition of registered mail within Section 1 of the ARTO. Amendment of the date of service to cater for postal service is something that also relates to Section 30 as well as the definitions that you find in Section 1, with a view to try and eliminate the contradiction that one finds in Section 1 vis-a-vis Section 30. The next element that she's making proposal is the amendment to Section 21 should not be repealed in its entirety, but proposes the retention of paragraph 1E, which provides for the power to immobilize a motor vehicle. We have recognized, because of the possible economic hardships that one would be able to face, as well as the requirements for the authorization of a warrant of execution, failure of which there is no basis of contractual arrangements, and therefore we were proposing for the complete repeal of Section 21 with the advisory that comes from here with practical implications. She is proposing further that yes, in as much as we repeal Section 21, and in response to Honorable Hamsina, she had given examples in respect of that, for the retention of the power to immobilize a particular motor vehicle. Propose an amendment to Section 34 to allow for circumstances where an infringement notice, catches letter, or enforcement order may be reissued. And in this respect, we had given the related detail that one of the restrictions in terms of the ARTO, as you know, it works on the basis of restricted time frames. If a notice has not been served within a 40-day period, it automatically nullifies itself. But similarly, in terms of Section 21, it is a contradiction because the intended purposes of the Act specifically says that any outstanding infringements are not subject to the laws of prescription. And if it is not subject to the laws of prescription, and you read it vis-a-vis Section 17, that indicates that you need to be able to serve this within a 40-day period. Non-compliance, therefore, is contradictory in terms when you read the whole Act in itself. And therefore, if you look at the practical implications, a lot of infringers submit representations and challenging the basis of those infringements, not challenging the mere fact that they have not committed an infringement, but only challenging the method of service and the validity related thereto. The proposal that Ms. Honorable then makes is to be able to make a provision so that when an infringer claims not to have received the particular document within the related time frames, that we make that provision for a reissuing of that particular notice. It proposes the retention of Section 35 as it is in the Principal Act, and that there is no need for further amendments. In respect of Section 35, this is the one that makes provision that as soon as the ARTO has been implemented nationally, there will not be any need to serve Section 56 and Section 341 notices. And she says on the basis of that, that there is no need. However, the way that we're looking at it, in terms of the redefinition of infringement, there is no differentiation between a major infringement and a minor infringement. And in that respect, you would then categorize the infringement to be served under the ARTO administrative processes, whereas the offenses are still remaining within the Criminal Procedure Act. That's the basis upon the need to be able to retain the distinction that we are discussing and making proposals on that. you just excuse me, I seem to have touched something that disturbs me, so I'm just going to quit it and go back on to Lydia. My apologies to your person. The next element where the proposal has been made is the National Contravention Register to be available at border posts in order to enable foreigners with outstanding traffic notices to be required to pay the notices before leaving South Africa, and that offenders who did manage to leave without paying should be required to be able to make payment upon re-entry. I just want to be able to place a reminder and relevance in respect of this proposition that has been made by Ms. Swanepoel vis-a-vis the one that was presented on the 2nd by CANCOM, because the ones related to CANCOM is actually directly related to international drivers, the ones that fly into the country. Whereas this one, from a practical point of view, the proposal that has been made would typically affect those ones within the southern countries. And that is an example that Ms. Swanepoel has been making in terms of comparing our legal, our legislative provision vis-a-vis the southern countries that makes a provision for sport fines. Honorable Ramataka then made some follow-up questions in that respect to say, are we really making proposals for the provision of sport fine environment, or is it a special dispensation on restricted time frames? And this is the issue that is related, because it is a dichotomous issue for foreigners, the ones that would be driving in and out of the country more regularly, and the ones that would be flying in and out of the country. In respect of the provisions that can come, then I will go into the related details when they come to it. The responses that the Department of RCA provides, we agree with the amendment of the definition of authority to allow the minister to prescribe additional issuing authorities if the need arises so to do. And this is also in the spirit of the inclusion of the complete environment, not restricting it to road traffic, but also include road transport legislation. And the related power, you would then be in a much better position to affect the required interventions. We also agree to extend the definition of infringement to allow for those infringements in terms of the National Land Transport Act, Cross-Border Road Transport Act, and all related national road legislations. Further, we agree to inclusion of registered mail in the definition section in order to create the necessary legal certainty in terms of what constitutes registered mail. And this is something that is also particularly attendant if one looks at the submission that was made by Justice Project South Africa. Safe to say, without going into the necessary detail, there's a number of other contentious issues which are the subject of litigation, and therefore we would want to be able to respect that process. We agree also to amend the date of service to cater for the postal services. Similarly, in respect of subsection 2 or section 30, when it comes out to the service of document, the proposal for electronic service will also incorporate the deeming provisions that are applicable, because the deeming provisions currently are only in respect of registered mail. If we then include electronic services, you need to similarly include the related deeming provisions in that respect. We have disagreed with the retention of Section 21.1e, which provides for the power to immobilize the motor vehicle, but it is then up to the committee to be able to engage on that, particularly relating to some of the challenges that Honorable Hamsinger has made further follow-up on that respect. In principle, we agree with amendment to Section 34, allowing for circumstances when infringement notice, courtesy letter, or enforcement order may be reissued. Honorable Chairperson and members, this is something that also has very serious implications in terms of the fiscal responsibilities that are on the basis of issuing authorities. One, it is something that the Auditor General also made provision and pronouncement in relation to that. All the issuing authorities are working on the basis of what is called an accrual system of accounting. And one has to be able to piggy that vis-a-vis the cash basis of accounting. And in that respect, any infringement that has been issued has got to be accounted for in terms of the financial implications bearing upon it. If the notices have been issued and for things are beyond the control of the issuing authority, and this is the service that we're saying is being provided by external service providers, in this respect by the South African Post Office. In the South African Post Office, as it has happened on many occasions that they've been subjected to long-term strikes, the notices that have been generated by the issuing authorities automatically becomes null and void because they have not been served within a certain period. In this respect, one needs to be able to introduce a provision that allows the issuing authority to be able to reserve that particular notice. Again, one would have to be able to read it in terms of Section 29 when we make pronouncement that the legislator said any outstanding infringement is not subject to the laws of prescription. However, contradictory to what we have made provision in terms of Section 17, one therefore has got to be able to provide that necessary leeway, because if we don't, then we empower a lot of infringers to always get off scot-free. And this is a proposal that we think is very positive there. We had a disagreement with the proposed retention of Section 35 as it is in the Principal Act. And in this respect, we are saying it makes a distinction that is already covered with the inclusion of Section 1 when we pronounce on the definition of an infringement, currently working on the basis of major infringement and minor infringement. By eliminating the difference, you only have the two categories of infringement vis-a-vis offenses that must continue to be dealt with in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. And if you're dealing with it in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, Section 56 and Section 341 becomes the originating mechanism in order to be able to bring this particular person to account for the actions in court. That, in essence, Chairperson, entails all the proposals and the analysis that have been provided by Ms. Alzheimer Pufanepoel. We are very excited about the positive nature of how they've been included, and we do support some of the proposals that have been made. The second presentation was made by South African Taxi, and in this respect, we've also noted something that seems to permeate among a number of other stakeholders, that there is a distinction that they were unable to make between the substantive issues provided in the amendment bill and the operational challenges, such as the interest that they would have had. And in this instance, we have taken positively any other comment that has been made on operational issues, and we'll be able to elevate to the necessary parties to be able to deal with substantive issues related to the proposed amendments. This is what we'll then be able to deal with. The first point that we're making is the suspension of driving licenses that would affect employees' remuneration. And here we've also noted that their interest, as they have also expressed it, is if they have financed any of these taxis, these motor vehicles, the more they stay on the road operating, the better it is for their own business. But if these vehicles, out of non-compliance with related road laws, they get suspended and they end up losing a lot more money. But again, the point that we would have to be able to emphasize is the outdoor and all road legislation is on the basis of increasing the related road safety. Without that onerous concentration of the financial aspects and the impact that it would have. We're also making provision the comment that penalties for similar infringements have to be consistently applicable to all infringers, and they made comment in terms of the auto readiness as well as the suspension of operator cards. In response, again, we have said the implementation of the delivery points will not affect the cancellation of driving licenses if the driver complies with all road traffic laws. And in this instance, it is very important for one to be able to note that, again, the non-compliance is categorized on two issues. There are driver-related infringement and there are vehicle-related infringement. The vehicle-related infringement will not affect the driver. And the non-compliance of the owner of the motor vehicle is the one that would then end up through the demerit points suspending the operation of the particular motor vehicle without affecting the ability of the driver in their own personal capacity to go about their own business. We also emphasize the second point, the that the Act of standardizes all road traffic related infringements. We do have circumstances that there would be varied penalties that are meted across the country. If you go to the municipality perhaps of Smithfield or Pigeonhill, you might find that going over a red road carries a certain penalty. And this is what has been determined by the various directors of public prosecution, taking into consideration the economic circumstances that will be applicable within the related provinces, magistrate jurisdictions, as well as local district there. But however, the ARTO standardizes through the Schedule 3 of the regulations that provide for all 2054 various infringements that will be applicable all across the country. And we can, the basis of determining the penalties will be able to show the devalue, the lack of an ordinary South African at the same level, irrespective of whether you live in a rural community or whether you're living in the most urbanized environment. We've indicated there, just for further information, we do have a master implementation plan that checks and tracks on a regular basis, a readiness on a continuous basis, and the interfaces related to the systems in getting the ARTO implemented across the country. Primary points are only linked to the infringing motor vehicles and would not necessarily affect the complete fit of those motor vehicles. If one has 20 motor vehicles and only 3 of those vehicles are the ones that have been non-compliant, you would have those 3 motor vehicles with the demerit points levied on them. Further to that, input number 3 that we're considering, Chairperson, is the input by South African Local Government Association. The point that they're mentioning is the interfacing between the National Contravention Register and the local contravention management systems. On this basis, all issuing authorities currently have got their own systems. Some might be implementing their own self-developed system, others they're using service providers that specializes in traffic management. And what we have made provision then is the provision of an interface that would update on real-time information basis irrespective of whatever system, whether it is coming from company A, company 2, or company 13, would not make any difference. The common platform that we would have is the National Contravention Register that would upload the capturing of the related infringement data and make it applicable for further processing. They've also indicated the innate challenges and the reconciliation of the penalties that might lead to audit queries. And in this respect also, it is something that has implications in terms of the basis of accounting, be it on a care basis or whether it related to an accrual basis of accounting. They made mention of the high cost of registered mail and similarly vis-a-vis the current provision that is applicable under the Criminal Procedure Act, where the Section 341 and Section 56 notices are just being issued by ordinary mail. They further made input in terms of the representations, the consideration thereto, and the implications of what it has to ordinary infringers vis-a-vis the interest of the issuing authorities. There is a provision that has also been made in terms of withholding of monies to all the institutions. In Section 32, we have made that provision that currently says, given the well-publicized non-compliance, if we take an example of the municipality of Johannesburg, by not complying with Section 30 or serving either in person or by registered mail, for an elongated period of time, they were just sending notices by ordinary mail, which is conflictual to what provisions of the Act is. And in this respect, the proposal that had been made was that in those circumstances where there is non-compliance by the issuing authority, the RTRA would then penalize the issuing authority by withholding the related penalties that is supposed to be given to them. There is a proposal that they then made that says, just while they're supportive of that, they can understand the reasoning, therefore, they would want to be able to make a counter-proposal that it should be applicable both ways, not only to the issuing authorities, but similarly, the RTRA must also have penal mechanisms in cases where the RTRA does not comply with provisions. The next point is that the holding the registered owner of the vehicle responsible for all the infringements, and we'll go into slightly more detail when we touch on this in respect of the response that we're giving. Opposition to amendment of Section 21 particularly in respect of the possible disempowering of the issuing authorities who've got the accountability for law enforcement in this respect. However, something that is also very, very critical, the opposition that they put in here in terms of Section 21 is not blanket full, but in fact, they're coming up with a positive counter-proposal so that you do not just reduce Section 21, but you need to be able to include an intervention mechanism that would have perhaps even much better outcomes, positive towards the increment of road safety. And they're proposing that we need to be able to consider less expensive methods of service, as well as the provision to establish and administer rehabilitation programs. And that proposal for the establishment of rehabilitation programs, it is something that they're also interlinking it with the repeal of Section 21 wholesomely, but that in the absence of that, the most potent provision that would then take effect would then be the rehabilitation programs that might be administered. And also made comment in terms of the renaming of the RTRA. The proposal there being made is that to change the RTRA's definition from an agency to an authority. We provide a chairperson in response to interfaces between the National Contravention Register and the Local Contravention Management System, that the process currently is working efficiently. In the current municipalities, we have other people that are using different systems from more than five different companies. The city of Johannesburg was also unique in the sense that they had at one point five different service providers with their own individual customized type of IT system that needs to be able to interlink with the e-matrix. And in this respect, we then developed the necessary specifications, provided the interlink, and for them to interface directly that would enable the uploading of the very data that is developed on different platforms. And the system is actually operating efficiently in this respect. The city of Tshwane and the Gauteng Department of Community Safety are also using completely different systems, the one that is applicable in the city of Johannesburg. So this point has been proven that the provision of the interface link is the one that yields the desired result in this respect. We've also noted the e-native challenges and the reconciliation of penalties that could lead to police queries, and the matter has been addressed by the RTIE making payment to the issuing authorities. We pride ourselves as the RTIA that we've been very good custodians of the outdoor environment, and we have also subsequently reported in the previous financial years. In the 14-15 financial year, we had paid, I think, 168 million rand, 148 million that we paid to the various issuing authorities. This previous financial year, we made a payment of totaling 264 million rand. And the basis of all those is also something that we went beyond the requirements by allowing the Auditor General to subject both our processes, being the internal system, business environment of the RTRA, as well as custodyship. So in essence, the RTRA was faced with two objective audits that confirms that the payment that has been made actually alleviates the burden that the issuing authorities have in respect of any other possible queries and the alignment of the basis of accounting from accrual vis-a-vis the cash basis of accounting. We have noted the cost of register mail, as we had introduced the electronic system in order to be able to save costs. We have noted that on average the city of Johannesburg issues infringement notices between 200,000 and 340,000 every single month. At some point, if you are serving these notices by registered mail, it comes out anywhere between 8 million and 10 million rand being the cost of service by registered mail in that. The issuing authorities have taken that as something that has significant financial implications on them. The provision of the various type of service method will also significantly reduce the actual cost of service as required by the Act. In terms of the representations, the RTIA has increased the capacity of representation officers to deal with the representations nationally. And this is a comment that they were also proposing in terms of us dealing with the representation so that we should be in a position to have the related capacity that people that made representations would be adjudicated within the required time frames. The regulations make provision that any representation that has been submitted must be adjudicated within a period of 21 days. We pride ourselves that even over the last two financial years, of the total number of representations that have been received, the AFTRA has been able to adjudicate 99.34% as provided by the legislation. It is not possible to adjudicate 100% at the end of financial year because you have to make provision for those that may submit representations on the very last day or the last week, and therefore there are adjudication framework imperatives that need to be followed in order to ensure that you treat everybody else fairly and effectively and apply your monies to the requirements. We agree to the proposal for withholding the monies from the RTIA. Again, this is the proposition that we have made, that the RTIA is empowered to withhold monies from the issuing authorities if that issuing authority is non-compliant. They are proposing that similarly, if the RTIA is not compliant, they must also be penalized by the issuing authorities withholding monies that is due to the RTIA. And in this respect, it has balanced the scale, and we say, yes indeed, perhaps it was an oversight on our side, looking at it only from a one-dimensional point of view. So it is something that we agree to and we support that proposal. Holding the registered owner of the vehicle responsible for infringement, that is actually the current process. And there is similarities between this particular submission and the one that was made by HENCOM on day number two. In those circumstances where there is electronic detection of non-compliance, you do not have the particulars of the motor vehicle driver, and therefore, by extrapolating the data that is available on the NCR, the only detail that you have will be of the owner of that motor vehicle. And therefore, it is the only mechanism that we can identify somebody to tell us who was not complying with the law. In that case, one of the elective options of the ARTO does make that provision that the owner of the vehicle would then take upon their own responsibilities and nominate the related driver that was in charge of the vehicle at the time that the infringement had been committed. The proposed amendment of Section 21, the warrants would have a negative socio-economic impact. And in this respect, this is the element that I said, it is a dichotomous proposal that they made, firstly, in opposing Section 21, not wholesomely, but then further say, if Section 21 gets repealed, it then has to be replaced by some kind of rehabilitation program. And therefore, we are fully supportive of the establishment and the provision of rehabilitation programs. However, the socio-economic impact of the warrant of execution is something that we have considered, and that's the reason why we want to have Section 21 repealed. Less expensive methods of service will be achieved through the introduction of the electronic service, and we fully agree with the inclusion and the provision to establish and administer the related rehabilitation programs. That, Honorable Chairperson, being in essence the comments and the input that have been made stemming from the South African Local Government Association, we truly appreciate you for all the positive input that they've made, similar to what we're saying. While they were cautioning against the repeal of Section 21 wholesomely, but there is a further positive input that they're making in there. The next submission that comes out from TASIMA, we would want to be able to make just a commentary in this respect, in as much as we have detailed every one of the comments that they have made. We recognize that there are two issues in this respect. The first one being commentary on the legislative provisions. Secondly, making comment on the other operational issues. We are pleased with the position and the questions that were asked by the committee that we need to be wary of this honorable committee being used to fight other battles that are not related onto here. So we try by all means not to find ourselves tempted to make any other commentary on issues that may be litigious and that goes beyond the specific purposes of this exercise. E-Natis has 20 different integrated modules. This is what they've indicated. All aspects of the NCR has been tested and functional. Honorable Amsinger has also made further commentary on that, wanting them to be able to confirm it. They've given that related confirmation there. They've indicated that it was not optimally operated by issuing authorities and the RCIA. that the NCR provides for all the required functionality, that there are exceptions that may still be handled under the Criminal Procedure Act, that the NCR has been made ready for immediate national implementation, and that change management proposals made to the RTA in 2013, the operational issues that needed to be attended to, and the proposal to remove the definition of the National Road Traffic Offences Register from the bill. In response, as I've indicated, Chairperson, we'll just go straight forward to the details in there without making any other commentary on other issues that they had mentioned. E-natives were developed as a register of vehicles, drivers, etc., plus the addition of the NCR functionalities that had caused numerous changes on E-natives, costing the government millions of rands unnecessarily. Again, this is something that is deeply initiated and expressed within the litigation that is currently ongoing. The RTIA did an assessment, not only internally, but also with the assistance of external experts on the NCR, and at a point we found 101 deficiencies that were reported to TASIMA in 2013. Since then, only 5 of those issues had been attended to. Again, members will be aware, because of the tedious nature and the challenges between themselves, the RTMC and the department will not be able to go into that. So it was only a one-dimensional, unfortunate mentioning that three natives was ready, and those are the issues that are sitting with the issuing authorities and RTIA since 2013, but without expressing their underperformance in relation to that. The issue authorities and the RTIA stopped using issue notices due to the lapse of the posting processes, as well as the break in the interfaces between the SARPO and the NCR. The NCR has some issues that are presented to TASIMA and can be evident from slide 23, bullet number 1 of the presentation that they made. It's a misrepresentation that the NCR was ready for national implementation if one looks at bullets 2 and 4 above. The proposals by TASIMA were not acceptable to RTIA requirements, that is, a proposal by TASIMA to change the system that would also have required legislative changes. A number of operational issues that are dealt with through the RTO Master Implementation Plan on a continuous basis. And we expressed here that government has a prerogative to determine its business and operational requirements and tools. And the proposal that they were wanting to make is basically one that seeks to be able to protect their own environment, that everything else must be left the way that it is in terms of the NCR. And he said that is only government's prerogative to determine how it wants to do business. It cannot be held to ransom by anybody else. The next submission submission that we go into is the ones that were made by Justice Project South Africa. First comment, that the electronic service ignores the laws of the service of legal documents. First, let me also indicate, Chairperson, and my members that as much as this was the more detailed commentary that has been received, a lot of it does not necessarily relate to the substantive issues of the amendment bill. A number of challenges and issues that have been mentioned are just purely operational issues, and those ones, as I've indicated, we are able to identify and elevate them to the related parties that will be able to deal with them. Inasmuch as it was about the document, but the substantive issues are not as enormous as the document itself seems. The second point was, inadequate instrument does not all the drivers possess cell phones and other electronic addresses that have been complemented by the section, nor are they motorists technologically competent. In our response, we said we made a point that this is inapplicable because the ARPO is actually a purely administrative process that is unconnected to the court system. And this is what relates to the allegation about the legal service of documents. To this extent, in any event, we indicated that the rules of court, especially rule number 4A, since 2012, have been changed. pursuant to the proclamation of the Electronic Communication and Transactions Act to accommodate electronic service of documents. In this respect, inasmuch as the presenter had gone through a lot of details in citing the rules of court, the Superior Court rules and the Magistrates' Court, but there is no recognition that they're making about the positive trajectory that has been made by the judiciary in itself in terms of recognizing the potency of the electronic method of service. And there is a quite significant body of work in terms of finalized court cases that are precedent in their own rights, coming from the Superior Court themselves. The motorists will be served notices electronically only to the extent that they would have provided such address information to the agency. Similarly, this is something that can be anchored on Regulation 32A of the National Road Traffic Act, and similar to when somebody makes application and interact with all the leading authorities, they would indicate their preferred method of service, similar to what is incorporated in the FICA regulations. So when they go and they apply for the services, they will indicate, I would prefer, for ease of reference, use my electronic means, serve me via email, and we would then be able to do likewise in them. The presumption of service that is based on secure mail is inadequate, as the agency has never been able to serve any KTC letter using that method. Our response is the point raised is relevant as it does not relate to any loss which is proposed in the amendment. The agency can confirm it has been able to successfully effect the service of documents utilizing registered mail. It is also important to be able to indicate at this particular stage that other issues that have been raised in these submissions, we are not detailing there. It is important to be able to note that there are at least three cases where the JPSA is suing. One, they're suing the Minister of Justice and the Minister of Transport. Second one, they're suing the RTIA as well as the municipalities of Tshwane and Johannesburg. And the third one, they're even suing the registrar in his personal capacity for the work that has been done under the ARTO. And other issues that they're mentioning here would then be subjudicated, and to that extent, that's why we would not be in a position to be able to make detailed responses on every individual one of those ones. But JPSA has been one of the stakeholders that we've been thoroughly engaging with. The third input, the proposing the amendment through the insertion of subsection 3 to section 32, does not do anything to enhance the efficiency of the system, because the issuing authority becomes entitled to the ARTO share of revenue as soon as it begins complying with it. And that is the provision that we talked about the penalization to the issuing authorities in circumstances where there has been non-compliance with the Act. Third, the measure will compel the issuing authorities in order to comply at all times, because the retention of the revenues will terribly affect the cash flows that is due to all the issuing authorities. Again, the emphasis nonetheless has to be in respect of the road safety imperatives more than the financial considerations. They also made commentary on remedial driving programs for demerit drivers. This is one of the positive elements that we're looking into, and one needs to be able to couple it with the proposal that has been made by SALGA in that respect, that when they say the repeal of Section 21 must then be replaced by provision for rehabilitation programs, is something that jointly would be positive and beneficial for the environment. The next input that they make is in respect of the constitutionality issues, claiming that the mere provision of this Act is unconstitutional. It's also unfortunate that they were not only making this pronouncement in respect of the proposed amendment, but unfortunately, condescendingly, making this unconstitutional claim to the whole ARTO itself in terms of current Act and how it has been promulgated. Our response was that the bill was referred to the state law advisor for pre-certification and the certification process. The reason for such referral was to obtain, among others, the confirmation regarding the constitutionality of the bill. We made also examples that since we started with the implementation, there has been claims of unconstitutionality and people wanting to be able to sue it since 2008. There's not been a single case that the agency has faced that seeks to prove the unconstitutionality of the amendment bill. The acting DG, Mr. Matabati, had also given a brief in respect of this on the introductory remarks that confirms the specific interrogation of the compliant that should be able to prove its constitutionality. That's one of the reasons why it went through the Justice and Crime Prevention Security Clusters, the Forum of Directors General, and the subsequent support and approval by Cabinet for its tabling here. Present to take him of the constitutionality issues, the RTIA and the DOT had engaged the state law advisors and we had secured the confirmation of compliance in that. The rest of the input by JPSA Chairperson are unrelated to the sessions which have been amended. However, as we can confirm, the related operational implications of what has been proposed, those are some of the things that we will then be able to take up with the relevant stakeholders with a view towards enhancing all the operations there. The last submission, oral submission that was presented was by CARECOM. Some of the key issues that they had made pronouncement of, number one was the non-receipt of notices due to the post office. Again, perhaps, President, if I may state, in respect of, in particular, SA Taxi, CARECOM, and TASIMA, one is able to see the self-interest that comes out from their own side. And it is unfortunate that the submission that have been made were not truly objective or balanced in that respect. So it seeks to be able to advance certain interests that have not been pre-declared at the very beginning. They make proposal, they may comment on the non-receipt of notices due to the post office, and challenging how SMSs will be deemed to be sent, that there is no provision for infringements for international drivers, that the issuing authorities were differing in the requirements, particularly in respect of the nominations. The issuing authorities cannot change, cannot manage the related volumes in that respect. The submission of elections to be tried in court, the issuing of enforcement orders, which they claim is a tactic by the RTIA. They commented on the manner of service to different infringers, saying that individuals must be served by registered mail. The companies with fleets must be served electronically through the web-based services or through FTP file protocols. That there must be email with delivery receipts, as well as the RTIA being required to provide monthly electronic files in order to confirm the receipt of all the notices by the infringers. Also commented on the timelines on infringers. Individuals allow payment of ARPA fines to be done more easily. But for companies, we need to increase the time to identify the offenders by enabling electronic nominations via the web, having an audit trail to ensure notices are being sent to the correct person, as well as ensuring that we have common standard operating procedures. We indicated in our response that the bill seeks to address the service of document via other means. And we want to emphasize that an SMS would not be used as a service, but to be able to inform the infringer. It merely becomes an additional business tool that should be able to prompt the infringer that they act as timely as possible. But the related documents to be served would be electronic or by any other means that would have been proactively chosen by the infringer when interact with the issuing authorities, either by way of submitting the NCO form or by submitting form Article 32. They're making a proposal for a dispensation for international drivers to be developed for the ports of entries. Standard operating procedures, we said, have already been developed and currently are being implemented. The capacity of capturing and electronic submissions have also been developed, and they themselves have confirmed the electronic submissions of the platforms that we have made provision for. One of the unfortunate things that they have been exercising was the indiscriminate wanton election to be tried in court which has been done not in accordance with the law. And it is something that we have also noticed, it comes out based on the observation that people have about the system deficiencies. When infringers realize that they are unable to succeed with the representations, they automatically now see a viable shortcut as being indiscriminate elections to go to court, knowing that this would automatically fall off the grid. So the RCIA applies the law when the infringer has not responded to the infringement, and this was on the basis of the allegation that they are making that the RCIA only uses the courtesy letters and enforcement orders to unnecessarily force people to comply. Registered mail to individual infringers has proved to be expensive, and the claim that they're saying we must have infringers, individuals with registered mail, but for businesses we need to be able to serve them only by web nominations. We have indicated that companies do have access to web nominations, which is currently being implemented. Email transmissions can also be tracked and proved, and this is something that we have also implemented through some of the other pilots that have been done. We do have some operating procedures that have been developed, and the proxies need to take responsibility for vehicles in their name. One of the other unfortunate comments that have been made was to be able to increase the time frame that has been given to businesses. And it's also unfortunate because would have the effect of empowering businesses more than you empower all the other individual infringers. And that cannot be right, because the time to nominate is 32 days that have been given, and we do not support any provision of additional time from just for businesses. Just because somebody has a fleet, we must therefore be able to give them more power in terms of the elections that they have. We've also noted the submission that it made about the need to be able to increase different platforms. We have increased the number of compliance platforms, and I say compliance platform because it's not just a payment platform, it's just for compliance, because one should be able to elect whatever that they want to be able to elect, but more than 2,000. In terms of the annual reports for the 2015-16 period, we indicate that RTIA has increased the payment platform by 2,066. Various platforms. We send the notices to the addresses that have been provided by the infringers to the actual registered owners' addresses, and we have also increased the capacity of catering and the electronic submissions that have been developed. In summation, there are two things that are very key from the submissions that CANCOM had made. One is the one that relates to the circumvention of the act and the provisions that have been made, and it's also unfortunate that they are one of the businesses that have been established purely to be able to assist fleets operators to circumvent the law. And they also one of the stakeholders that had taken the RTIA to court, having gone through that litigation. Unfortunately, they end up losing, and we even had costs that were awarded, costs to counsel awarded against them. So this is just one of the mechanisms that, unfortunately, Chairperson, they taking leverage to try and take advantage of the oppositions. And one aspect that we truly did not like was the fact that they made proposals that it is difficult for them to comply, given that their clients have got international foothold, and therefore their head office are in other countries other than in South Africa, and for them to change their business model and operating processes is going to be unnecessary onerous. And the point that we want to be able to indicate that South Africa is a country in itself. If you want to do business in South Africa, it is only fair. You must just comply with our own laws. We cannot subject other countries' the imperatives and say, yes, we will accept that because it's not developed in South Africa. The submission that was also made by Bonginkosi, and the two issues that were mentioned, motor is not sufficiently sophisticated to interact with electronic service methods, and making proposal that we need to be able to use one language instead, that the use of only one language instead of the 11 approved languages will likely cause imperils to the infringers. In our response, we say the ARU provides for various methods of services in order to suit the different needs and circumstances of the infringers, because, yes, if one takes the argument that other people are sophisticated enough to use electronic means, you are not doing away with any type of service method, you're simply adding on to these electronic ones. We take positively that the suggestions to use multiple languages, yes, that is a positive proposal that has been made. Traditionally, notices have only been served in English and Afrikaans. James Beach did not make any substantive input to the amendment bill, except that the SAPO is not a reliable conduit of serving infringement notices. However, we propose to then acknowledge each and every one of the inputs that have been made, whether it contains substantive contributions to the amendment bill or whether it is just a commentary related to the operational efficiencies and the challenges that have been experienced. Solid IOP raised concerns that are operational and not related to the amendment issues, such as the following: the inaccuracy of the database information, and this is something that we'll be able to deal with in terms of the provision of the NCR and the operational challenges that have been faced. In summation, Chairperson, a number of other contributions that have been made shows key aspects that permeate through all the other comments that have been made. We've indicated, as the FNDG said, those issues that relate to the allegation of unconstitutionality and legality of the ARCO and what the environment provides for. The submission in respect of electronic service is something that perhaps most people have been commenting on, but it also shows perhaps a need for clarity on some of the other issues. The intention has always been we make provision on a high-level principle basis in the Act, and the related operational mechanisms and the prescriptions thereto, by its very nature, is always provided for in the supporting regulations. So the regulations will detail all other requirements that support the enablement that will be given to the Minister in terms of Section 34 of the Act. One of the key proposals that has been made that we submit, support is in respect of the rehabilitation programs, and there's also been good support that has been received on the basis of the repeal of Section 21 because of the socio-economic impact that one finds in respect of that. But we truly are grateful for the opportunity that we've had and the consideration. I want to be able to confirm again, Chairperson, that we will submit this officially so that Chairperson would be able to have the committee's records on the consideration by the department and RTA and our submission in that. Myself, the acting DG, and the whole team, we are at the committee's disposal to provide any clarifications or to answer any questions related thereto. On behalf of the team, Chairperson, we express our deep appreciation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shua. Thank you very much, DG. Honourable members, earlier, the presentation has been made. I just want to check with yourself as to whether can we get from the legal advice plus what they see in this whole deal before we can engage. That is fine with you. Can I start with you? Number two.
Thank you, Jonathan. Good morning, members, and good morning, everyone. Just to add one thing to what the acting DG has said in respect of the legal matters, we picked up that there are four legal matters. The ones that is counted, and the last one is the inequality in respect of the pilot project being rolled out in just one province and not the other provinces. So me and the central advisor, Mr. Mongameli Gweta, will deal with those four issues. I will deal with two, and Mr. Gweta will deal with the other two. I will take the constitutionality of the ARTO Act and the ARTO Amendment Bill and the legality or the quality of the electronic service. Most of the unconstitutional word came from the JPSA Commission. They are alleging that ARTO is unconstitutional and that presumes that someone is guilty until proven innocent, and they're relating that to the fact that once a person has received an infringement notice or courtesy letter, then that person is already assumed to be guilty in terms of the Act and Amendment Bill. And just like the CEO of the ASA said, the submissions were made outside the bill. There's not a single clause that was pointed out to say that this was an unconstitutional because it does this, because the general submissions made in terms of the whole Act and the whole Amendment Bill. The speaker from the JPSA mentioned Section 35 of the Constitution and said that Section 35, the H of the Constitution is being violated because that section says everyone has the right to remain silent and to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. I just want to submit to the committee that Section 35 deals with three categories of people. It's the arrested people, the detained, and the accused. And the courts and the legal scholars have said that Section 35 is applicable during and before the trial of an accused person. And I want to submit that the ACT process is not a criminal justice system. It gives, it's an administrative way of dealing with offences that are committed on the roads. That is evident in Section 17 of the ARTO Act. In terms of Section 17 of the Act, a person who is alleged to have committed an infringement, the issuing authority is required to issue that person with a notice. And the Section 17 is a list of things that should be in the notice. And of importance is Section 17(1)(f). It says that the issue authority must inform the infringer that no less than 32 days after the date of service, the infringer may, it things that the infringer may do. And the most important one that I want to highlight to the committee is subsection 4, paragraph 4. It says that the infringer may elect in the prescribed manner to be tried in the court on a charge of having committed the alleged offence. That already, then only then will the infringement become an offence in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, and only then the presumption of innocence will kick in, and then in the court, then the court decisions will take place. Only then the state would be required to prove the case beyond reasonable doubt and prove the elements of the crime. You as the accused person, you just have to rebut the state evidence to show that you didn't commit any crime. It doesn't mean that your right to be presumed innocent is being violated. And I looked through the bill, and I looked through the Act, and I didn't see anything that violates this Section 35 right. So I just want to inform the committee that the committee can be at ease in terms of that there was nothing unconstitutional about the bill. And as the CEO has said, also, it's a bill before it comes to Parliament, it goes to the Central Advisor's Office to be certified for constitutionality, and it also comes to Parliament so that the parliamentary legal advisors can see if there are any unconstitutional clause, and at this current moment we haven't seen anything unconstitutional in the bill or in the Act for that matter. And the second issue that I would like to deal with is the issue of electronic service. The JPSA also mentioned that in South Africa electronic service is not allowed, and I just want to disagree with him because he made an example of the courts and how service in terms of the court rules must be effective. And actually in 2012, there was a general notice that was issued by the Department of Justice under notice number R464. It titled Amendment of the Rules Regulating the Conduct of the Proceedings of the Several Provincial and Local Divisions of the High Court of South Africa. And that rule allows the electronic service of delivery. It reads delivery of documents and notices. It says service of all subsequent documents and notices not falling under Rule 41A in any proceedings or any other party to the litigation may be affected by one or more of the following manners: to the address or address provided by the party under the rules, and personal or electronic mail to the respective addresses is one of the ways that you can serve a notice. And the JPSA speaker also mentioned the Section 29 notice of the National Credit Act, And I also just want to alert the committee that the Constitutional Court has dealt with the Section 29 notice. And in the case of Valizo versus the Federal Bank's court judgment, which was, I think, in April this year, the Constitutional Court used a paragraph that they used in the judgment of Kobayana. And I just want to read this quote from the Constitutional Court so that the committee can be assured that the electronic service is not a problem. The court says, once a credit provider has produced a check and trade report indicating that the Section 29 notice was sent to the correct place of the post office and has shown that a notification was sent to the consumer by the post office, the credit provider will generally have shown that it has discharged its obligation under the Act to effectively vary. So what I just want to point out is that in terms of our culture of spending, in terms of our current situation, what the courts are interested in is the fact that the person who sent whatever notice, if that person can prove that the notice was delivered to the person that it was intended to go to, then that is sufficient for the courts. Because one of the concerns was that how will the judgment prove or the agency prove that the notice was received. So the court has always said, as long as you can prove that it was received, then the court would not have a problem. And the panelists have said that there will always be proving the services, whether it's them or the issuing authority. And that's all from my side. Chairperson, I'll now hand over to the legal advisor to deal with the other two issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the issue that I'm going to deal with is the issue of the out Aksarem Patel rule that has been raised by one of the stakeholders. Apparently, according to the stakeholder, is that infringer must prove non-service in respect of once the infringer is served, then the infringer must prove that he or she is not guilty. And most importantly, to prove that, or rather, the infringer does not have the right to be heard, is not afforded an opportunity to be heard, thereby to be violating the principle of the Audi Ad Parem Partem rule. And I'll say the Audi Ad Parem Partem rule is a common law rule based on the Roman Dutch law principles of natural justice. And this is part of our legal system. And said the Constitutional Court in the Maseta judgment referred to this rule and said as following, the maxim expresses a principle of natural justice which is part of our law. The classic formulations of the principle state that when a statute empowers a public official or body to give a decision which is judicially affecting an individual in his liberty or property or distinct rights, the latter has the right to be heard before the decision is taken, unless the statute expressly or by implication indicates the contrary. The appellate division as well share pronounced on this rule as well and say that a rule of national justice is the rule of national justice which comes into play whenever a statute empowers the public official or body to do an act or give a decision prejudicially affecting an individual in his liberty or property or existing right, or whenever such an individual has a legitimate expectation entitling him to such a hearing, unless the statute expressly or by implication in his otherwise. Here, this principle, as I indicated, it was a principle based on the Roman Dutch law that was part of our legal system, Chair. And then the Constitution, in terms of Section 33, involves this principle of the Audi Ad Parem rule. Secretary Chair provides for just administrative action. It states that everyone has the right to administrative action that is lawful, reasonable, and procedurally fair. Procedurally fair, Chair, is linked to this right to be heard. The person must be given an opportunity to state his or her own case. Chair, I also have to point out the right of access to courts as well, Chair, that is provided in the Constitution in Section 34. That everyone has the right to have any dispute that can be resolved by the application of law, decided in a fair public hearing before a court or a appropriate, another independent or impartial tribunal or forum. Chair, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act was duly promulgated, Chair, and an act to give effect to Section 33 of the Constitution. And the act provides us provides the right to administrative action to the lawful, reasonable, and procedurally fair, and to the right to reasons for any administrative action. Elsewhere, the concern raised by the stakeholder was linked to Clause 9 of the bill, which provides for sales of documents on the infringement of personal or financial mail. And here, the amendment as indicated in the bill provides that a document should simply have been served on the infringement on the 10th day of postage or of everything service, and subsequent service must be reflected in the National Road Traffic Offence Registers unless evidence in the hands of it is adduced, which evidence may be in the form of an affidavit. Actually, the concern of the stakeholder seems to be that during the whole adjudication process of the alleged infringer being served and noticed, that particular alleged infringer will not be afforded any opportunity to be heard and state his or her own case. For example, before demerit points are imposed on him or a sentence is imposed on this particular individual. Chair, I'd like to point out that in Chapter 3 of the Actual Act, the Act itself shall not appear now. Applying the adjudication procedure in respect of road traffic infringements and the various options that are afforded to the alleged infringer. Section 71, Chair, states that once an infringer is served with a notice, infringement notice, that infringement notice is containing personal details of the infringer, the particulars of the infringement, the amount of the penalty, the prescribed discount of the penalty, the demerit points, the right to make representations, and also the right to go to court, the election to go to court. So those are the options that are open to an alleged infringer once an infringement notice is served on him or her. Now, sir, all of this means that the infringer, the alleged infringer, is involved in the whole administrative process. They will say the alleged infringer is an option of paying a reduced fine within 32 days, or make an arrangement for installments, and also to make recommendations, which may result in the finding reduced, cancelled, or rejected, because this is also that option. So the further issue is that the alleged infringer also has the option of saying, I was not the driver of the vehicle, this was the driver, and then make that nomination share to the issuing authority. Therefore, the infringer share is not excluded in the process share. And share with a further option to, or rather say, the act does give a duty to the issuing authority share to issue a courtesy letter. I would say it's a reminder share. On top of the alleged infringement being served in infringement notice. And the courtesy letter share would even inform the alleged infringer again, we will make representations, pay penalties, elect to go to court, and also warn the accused the alleged infringer share that failure to comply with the notification share, the courtesy letter will result in an issuing in the register issuing an important order, I think you might have. So, furthermore, sir, if an accused, or rather an alleged offender, sir, is tried in court, the due process, sir, will kick into play. Because once you are elected to be tried in court, the court will have to follow due process and will be given the right to be heard in court, sir. And furthermore, sir, the alleged infringer during the whole process and the question of implementing or rather of giving effect to the Commission of Administrative Justice Act and opt for going to court and review any decision that the authority may have made that actually affect this particular infringer. So the review process has opened to him or her in terms of the Commission of Administrative Justice Act. Because the whole process is an administrative process, Chair. Chair, I would like to go now to the issue of the inequality. This issue, Chair, is related to Section 36 of the Actual Act. attached chair, not the deal itself chair, but in front of the committee. So the committee should be alerted to that chair, that 736 not being amended. Chair, the concern was that 736 goes after an act provide that different days may be determined for the implementation of a different provision of the act in different areas, chair. And duly so, chair, the actual act has been in operation in a pilot phase in the Chuan area and also in the Johannesburg area, chair. Now, chair, the issue was that this right is the right to equality, is that other people are not treated equal to other people, chair. And Section 9 of the Constitution, chair, says that everyone has a right to equality. But now, chair, a case has made on that, but on the other hand, chair, Section 36 of the Constitution says that any right in the Bill of Rights will be limited by law of general application to the extent that the limitation is reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. Therefore, chair, this right to equality may be limited. But chair, there are conditions that are set out in 1936 that the person should consider factors such as the nature of the right, the importance of the limitation, the extent of the limitation, the relationship between the limitation and the purpose, and whether there are less restrictive means to achieve the purpose. Chair, the Constitutional Court pronounced on the issue of limitation of rights, chair, and stated that the limitation has been rational. And in the case of the Law Society of South Africa, the Minister of Transport, the Constitutional Court stated that the constitutional requirement of rationality is an incident of rule of law, which in turn is a strong value of our Constitution. The rule of law requires that all public power must be sourced in law, which means that the state enters the exercise of public power within the normal bounds of the law. That when making laws legitimate, the legislature is constrained to act rationally. It may not act capriciously or arbitrarily. He must not act, he must only ever achieve a legitimate government purpose. Thus, there must be a rational connection between the legislative scheme and the pursuit of the legitimate government purpose. And Chair, further, so that the Constitutional Court also stated that a law may differentiate between classes of persons if the differentiation is rationally linked to the achievement of a legitimate government purpose. Chair, the propagation of the outro only in Chuan and Johannesburg area. Our view is that it was made for a legitimate government purpose. And in terms of our interaction here, that since this was a new venture, the authorities, or rather the government, anticipated that there could be possibly major problems with rolling it out nationally. Therefore, there should be, rather than creating a national problem, should be a test in a particular area to see whether the implementation will run smoothly. And due to this course, according to instructions, there were some difficulties and challenges regarding this implementation here. But the purpose of not applying it nationally here was to ensure that there are no major problems that are rolled out nationally here. And obviously, chair, the people was to encourage compliance with the national and provincial laws, municipal bylaws, regulating the road traffic, chair, and promote road traffic safety. Therefore, not voting out, which chair, I would say the limitation of the right to equality in this respect, chair, is justified to the interpretation of the Constitution. There was also the issue of the generic points system that is also falling outside the ambit of the team, chair, but it was raised by stakeholders, chair. Chair, according to instructions, the demerit point system has not been rolled out yet. It is still in the statute book, but various stakeholders, chair, are not happy with it, chair. But my take on this, chair, is that the design of the act, chair, is that you incur this demerit point system not just at the onset of the process. You receive an infringement notice, you have various options, you may go to court. The demerit point system will take into place once the infringer failed hitherto was promptly refused notice, I don't make representations, I don't elect to go to court, and failed to comply with the committee letter and other notifications, and then the enforcement order shall be issued by the registrar, which enforcement order shall will contain provision that you are going to the register, your point are going to the register chair, or a criminal chair, or criminal chair, I'm not sure. But my check is that the process of the basic education is not violating any rights as contained in the Bill of Rights chair. That is all shared tomorrow. Thank you.
There you are, Manish. Can we engage? Honorable Hoshina Mashangani, along those lines, you will be the last part. Honorable Hoshina.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the comprehensive report. And I would like to see the amendments being amended now so that one can get a new perspective on where we are now, since I believe there's been very progressive progress from reading the bill. I still have a concern and I still lack clarity on the following aspects. NRTOR is proposed in the bill as a change of wording. But how does that actually differ from NCR? Very simple, but in practical terms, in terms of computer software. And question related to that, which of these were part of the pilot process? Secondly, I do understand the whole distinction within the framework of the initial infringement between major and minor infringements. I do still maintain, however, that we should have a comprehensive list, a practical list that lists all of those. What type of offence would be minor, major, and maybe a bit more detail around that as a suggestion, because somewhere along that cross the line and this infringement becomes an offence. And we have a rundown of a certain timeline, but I haven't seen any sort of schedule of some sort that would lay out these timelines, because in a way then it becomes complicated, because for a certain stage of the total timeline we have a particular notification, then it becomes a different notification. Now, how would the use of traditional notification postal methods be aligned to electronic ones, and how far would the electronic ones go, and which would be repeated at what stage? So just a very sort of comprehensive graphic layout of the different stages and what methods would apply at what stage during this whole process. Related to that, if I read section 9, I know the intention is that it should be a decision between using postage or electronic service. In other words, in addition to and not to exclusion of. However, it's not clear. Section 9 says very clearly or, which can be interpreted different. So I would submit for a bit of sort of expanding that, being a bit more clear and very specific about when what of these two methods would apply. Hence my suggestion to get a sketch of some sort which would then align the different stages of notification and issuing letters and also enforcement orders. In the third instance, I think we let something slip. What is backing the ball out of court in saying, you know, overseas countries just have to comply and so on and so forth. I agree in totality with that. But we should get some form of assistance in terms of a register. An extension of the current suggestions around what we need to keep on system. so that we are aware of two things. One being tourists from other countries and regular offenders, and also transporters of different countries, because we might have an economic implication in that you find that local companies would rather make use of foreign transporters and therefore because they get away with all sorts of things. So therefore a registrar of some sort would be most helpful in that regard. I'm worried about comments of the NCR, just to get back to that, where comments close to the exact wording where they said it was not optimally operated by issuing authorities, referring to NCR. Staying with NCR, comments like misrepresentation, it's a misrepresentation that NCR is ready for national implication. I'm worried about statements like that. We've had to pilot experimental trials to like situations, so what of NCR is not right? It can't be that nothing is right. So what is right? So a bit more finer distinction there. And then also JPSA comments around the operational issues, which we didn't take or get, we didn't take that into recognition, since we only expected comments on the bill. I think we should then also consider details of their comments, simply because we want some consistency in the whole country. We don't want anything to be interpreted in another way, and therefore being executed in a different manner in one province than the other. So some of the comments, I would admit, of JPSA is very applicable in terms of how different things can be interpreted. And at this stage we should be very specific and maybe also look at regulations which would be specific. Lastly, Chair, in having legal experts here as well, I would like to know, are IFA regulatory impact assessments? Just scanning through the regulation, it's quite clear that there were two opportunities in the process that have either missed the opportunity, or we it was an oversight of some sort, but since we have very significant financial implications in approving this bill in the process, I would submit very strongly that we do need to recognize the importance of RIA. I know that you have the prerogatives to allow that and that it needs to go through your hands, but therefore I would ask your strong consideration for that, even in a verbal manner, because it's necessary that certain things, objectives need to be analyzed, there are risks involved, we need to look at costs. So therefore the impact, social and environmental, but in particular financial implications, need to be assessed. That's all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got more questions, clarity issues for now. The first is, there was quite a lot being said about national contravention legislation and presumes that, from my perspective, presumes that it will be a life system, because it's an ongoing system that again that will be updating every second of the day at every border post. So I'm just asking, you know, it may look good on paper, but is this all realistic? So if you just talk about that, because it's all great to have legislation, it's not going to happen in reality. And also, linked to that is interfacing of the other registers that local authorities and provinces have, and how that would be working, how that would all be melting into one register that would be live all the time. The next point I just want some clarity on is the state of the motor vehicles are linked only to the motor vehicles themselves. Which I think is going to be quite problematic. There are many people who will have a number of vehicles on their name, but won't put a driver for whatever reason. They'll have someone else drive it. So if you're going to take that, I think we'll see major issues happening there. Surely the demerit points must be linked to the driver, not the vehicle.
Thirdly, rehabilitation programs, which I'm also surprised to hear about. I think about the practicality of it all and so forth, and who would pay for it. Where is a budget for such a thing come to? And how does one then determine if this person is rehabilitated? Is there a tried and tested method for phrase of this? Just for now, that's just a chat.
Thank you, Chairperson, and welcome to the report. I also want to ask more of self-explanatory. Hopefully, I will come back later, Chairperson. The penalty is on the infringer. Let's understand. You implemented the merit system by withdrawing the license, the permit, also the license. From there, somebody is taken to a rehabilitation, a service, a mortuary, or wherever. This is not too much, Chairperson. I mean, to be turned to a community service, you have been penalized. It's like being sentenced that you are not going to change, but you do a community service. You take my license, you take my license, this, I still have to go to a service. Why this? It's not draconian. I just want to understand. Maybe it's properly covered somewhere in the amendment. But if this is how it's going to be applied, I have a problem, Chairperson. Yes. I have a problem, more especially if somebody has been found guilty by a court of law. We have to debate this thoroughly. The other issue. I came late here last year. I'm not sure what else was good here. We should have benefited from the two pilot municipalities themselves. Not only are the planning job that have come here and said these are the advantages and disadvantages of this exercise. It's only SALSA will have covered it partially. So those municipalities are very critical, because that's where the project has been piloted. And as I say, I don't want to take it back because I was not here all along. There are reports from those two municipalities, as to what they are thinking in terms of this exercise. If we don't get that, otherwise it will be problematic, because we must base what we are doing on a case studies, and there are two case studies here. And a case study is not a case study for a case study, because this was not an academic case study. We wanted to have an empirical evidence coming out of there, and they present before us here. Otherwise, if we don't benefit from that, it's more academic, and we'll arrive at the wrong conclusion ourselves in a legislature. The other issue was an issue raised by a student, and I heard Mr. Schultz saying a law is law. There's a problem with parking for student cars in universities, and TVET and wherever. Those schools, the way they were planned, the parking bases were only for staff. But now, because the standard of living has improved, parents buy cars for their children. I was at the University of Pretoria last week. My daughter is studying there, but she doesn't have a car. So, if you are there at the University of Pretoria, all those roads, streets in the precinct, are full with student cars. And they are parking in areas which are not designated as parking, because the parking inside the university compound is strictly for the administration and the teachers who are lecturers. So then we say law is law. Then we apply certain laws to students. It can't be. The way we do our planning sometimes is not in line with how our people are going about. I can take an example of the new High Court in Polokwane. is right in the middle of the CBD. There is no parking provided for people who come to the court. It's in the corner of Ricard and Recording State. What happens if there's a case which has got lots of public insurance that people come from all over? There is a problem. So I thought that should be reviewed, should be looked at. And the other issue that I want to understand, Sir President, the review or the records that an infringer has, why do we make our system so expensive and inaccessible? Because every time before people have to review something, they must go to the conventional courts, which are not cheap. Why should it be so? All of us agree, yes, South Africa has to a certain extent that justice is afforded by the rich. There are areas where review provides for a tribunal instead of a court. And it's very cheap. You don't pay money to go there. You say, no, I don't agree with this decision. Same instance in the area of land development. I don't agree with this tribunal. I take it to a review tribunal. Or it not only applies land, even on other matters. But why should on this case people have to go even the second through criminal proceedings? So there are certain issues that I want to understand so that I make an informed comment. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank
check there are just any small other questions I want to
check. Just a few honorable members, all of them, it's like the efficient parade of some sort today. What's the say?
Okay.
There's a fashion parade of some sort.
Yeah, yeah. my question is in relation to the issue of the emails and telephone. I'm glad you said if you're sending an email to me, it happens that probably not that email went slow. Sometimes we use different jobs, you know. If you remember correctly, 2 weeks ago, the acting DG was Mr. Shabis. He was using the DG's email address. So this week it's Sumatavach. So I'm trying to take that particular, you know, assertion that and that improvement gets sent to you on a particular email and you just move to another person, to another company. What's going to happen if you don't reach it? What will be the evidence that you'll have that this person has received? And finally, at the end, the person finds himself, when he's going to renew maybe his license disc or his driver's license, that is owing a particular number of tickets and he went up to an amount whereby one of our restaurants in Egypt. What's going to happen in terms of that particular instance, professor? And this maybe a person doesn't want to provide his telephone numbers. What do you do in that respect? I'm trying to put an extreme in the whole part of the thing where a person doesn't want to give his particular information. But no, it's I was trying to hold people understanding this thing. Every legislation, when I analyze it, it's got politics issues. So I'm trying to understand, Chairperson, what is the politics of this legislation? For me, it doesn't give me good satisfaction. When I use my dialectics, it tells me that there is more into this than what it is. Because I know very well that one of the factors will use the material condition at that particular point in time to give it in this kind of legislation. I really get worried. Those are my dialectic analysis and the experience that I had, you know, with what we have, with our current politics. What is the politics within this particular appeal? It's very worried. It's very worried. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I don't know what I should respond to my colleague here on the question that he poses, but I will leave that for the Director General, the ex-Director General, because I think the question is posed there. Chair, just a few. Let me just also thank the comprehensive responses and presentation. And the legal perspective also, let's acknowledge that. But you know, I just want to check with the, while I'm on legal, the fact that we have this comforting response. I don't know whether it's some total of it. I don't think it should be some total of it. Now, I don't know whether you have seek any constitutional opinion on this. Because a couple of legal sponsors that we do have, if they are not having the eye on the constitutional opinion, it has a gap. So I'm just wondering to find out if you have already an opinion and issues from those groups that specialize on the constitutional law, that we should really pay to it, so that we don't deal with it dismissively, just easily like that. The one comment that came from the state law advisor on the stakeholder demerits, I think if I'm correct, he said that the stakeholders should not like this. But this there's nothing wrong with it. Now I was just wondering that the statement there is a sum total of the statement, or there must be something. If you are dealing with a participation process, you know, dealing with the application of mind, on engaging with people that you've asked to engage on things, surely there will be something that at the end, I'm just thinking about us, if we were to take the approach which is fairly dismissive of a concern that has been put on the table with short answers to it. We may be found wanting, and where there's experiences of law that the court and constitutional court has reversed based on these very same issues. So I just want to plead to the legal people, they look at it. They should comfort us more than just comforting us with the comments like that. Let me move away from the legal and go to the presenter. You know this issue that Concom raised and Falca raised, as well as the tax people, they say we are poorer without any information about what have you learned from the pilot process. You are saying you are some of the amendments you are bringing in because you have done the pilot, and this pilot you have learned certain things. But only you know about them. Nobody else has any view or privy to what you have learned and the issues. Now, what is it that is something there classified that the whole thing about being privy to it can't be shared? Because if there is a deep concern about it, then we need to learn from it. Surely we should be able to be privy to it, because that's basically in line with the legal perspective that is coming up to say you're piloting, you're learning, now you have picked up certain things, that's why you're now improving. Third issue for me is the plastication. I do agree with the interval, the review application. And the review applications which is the right that is there in law, but the achieving it is as difficult as anything because of the resource attached to it. So there should be something that address that part, even though it does not take it completely out of the equation. But if you say the route or has opened is the application review of that, maybe that's looking at the class of society in our country, then it's something that remains there available but not reachable. Because then you're talking about lots of payment that must be done up front. Another issue, Chair, is the issue about definitions and infringements. If there is an issue that is raised in terms of infringement and the definition of infringement, which is broad to include minor and, is there difficulties in your categorizing the infringement in an A and a B, for an example, as a part of that infringement? Then you quite clear in terms of infringement that the category A of this infringement, this is simply administrative and that, and then you get to more serious issues than you deal with it. So is there complications for that if you were to do it, or you think it's a matter of regulation? It's a matter that has to be on a regulation path. But if it's in the regulation and it's not in the principal definition, you are very thin on your feet. So it's something that you have to think about the two of that. Chair, the one area is this foreign issues, the foreign fines, penalty, and what is a special dispensation, and so on. Now, I'm just trying to find out what is the current situation. You said last time there were 9,000 or more, or I don't know, I can't remember the figure, but I remember there was a 9 in there that were unpaid because those people were foreigners, they left giving this penalty unpaid. So, if we don't have anything that deals with that aspect, it means that it will continuously be a perpetual problem of not dealing with it. So don't you think that somewhere in the definition, because again, we are almost on a thin ice, we're dealing with two-tier system now of our drivers. There are those who are South African, those who are foreign, who are visitors. So defining in a definition in order for us to enable you in the administration of that guilt in terms of payment, wouldn't it help if it's in the definition, and then or maybe later you can then deal with it in terms of where the payment happens? And is that for fine or is a special dispensation? That's what didn't come quite clear in the presentation, that what are we talking about? so that we are able to know exactly where we stand with that. So the chair, I'm happy to hear the thing about the forehead, the Director General, Forum of the Director General giving the go-ahead and so on. And I think that's fine. I'm happy with that, to hear that process. But that's not some total of this particular piece of legislation. Let me end, Chair, by saying that I think the electronic services issue, the tender being sufficient, in my view, around it. That does not necessarily mean that the electronic services are unconstitutional. So the canvassing and the clarifications that we receive in terms of the amendment of the rules, I think that clarifies us insofar as the other presentation that we receive. So that discomfort me in a minute. And so let me say, Chair, that I think that there are a number of other issues that are not mentioned, which at some point we probably would have to mention, that I also have, in terms of the Principal Act. The Principal Act in terms of what is the view, because this is amendment of the Act. So when I amend the Act, it is not only what you have presented that you're going to be yourselves with. The other clauses in the Act that with our consideration we would then say to you, we don't think this particular one, you've made a mistake by leaving this out. And we want to see the amendment, because basically this is no longer your Act. It's now the portfolio-owned Act. What we do with it, we accept what you say, or we can actually say, no, we don't quite agree. We come up with a complete brand new Act, because that's how the procedure works. So I just want to say, to make notice, that there are a number of other issues which we have not highlighted or presented, which are concerned in the Principal Act, which I think at the next interval, when we have a general discussion around the impression on the Act, generally on what is presented, and any other clause in the Act itself, that we'll be able to point out to you which are those sections that are troubling, that we think should also receive attention in terms of amendments. So that, I'm just registering that. Please be aware, be warned that it is going to happen. So next week. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Professor. It's good that we are here now, Chair, because I was asking myself, out of his nicely dressed gentleman, who is actually chairing the meeting. I'm saying dress it because they do not dress themselves. It's the wife that dresses.
Thanks. I want to first commend all the role players about the process that has been undertaken. But I'm not far away from what was raised by Honorable Maswanganyi in trying to get the effect of this amendment bill when enacted. Why ASO Chair is, after noticing the number of stakeholders or individuals that have turned up to make oral presentations or written presentations. I am worried about, I was pleased when I got the presentation from Salga, because it's a body that is representing a larger group of, let me say, public. They are the stakeholders that have the public interest at heart, other than the ones who have a direct or indirect business interest, like the ones that were making oral presentations to us last week. Chair, the stakeholder that worries me most is the one that ferries people to and from work every day, meaning the taxi association, because there was a similar presenter last week, but when we asked the patients directly to him that involves taxi operations, they said, no, I'm just the financer, I'm not the one. I'm worried about the taxi people because when they participate in silence, that is very dangerous. I don't believe to say that silence is golden. I don't believe in that because they may say we will get them somewhere. Directly to what has been presented to us, I have few questions. I am asking a question about is there no central database where you can tap and get my information to say how do I normally get my correspondence? Do I use email? Do I use SMS? Do I use how? I don't say I have not received the notice. Is there no central database that can be made or that is available that can be used so that you don't say I have not received such and such a notice? The other question is, there was a mention of a short mail, because people were saying last week during conversations that a registered mail is a bit expensive, and there was a proposal or a recommendation of a support mail. Have you done a research around that? Is it the same thing? I don't understand it. There's registered mail and support mail. I also think that after these declarations, there's going to be a new document. I think so. But, Jay, out of what I have noticed about the representation or the input from different stakeholders, I would propose that what if we give ourselves time or amend the process plan such that we create awareness to other stakeholders that are directly involved or who will be directly affected by the implementation of this bill when enacted. I think I'm a bit covered by the input from the honorary member next to me. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just touch you because my colleagues have already covered some, but also to act. Chairperson, you see, my concern was what Umama raised now. Like the issue we raised but to the department, we request the department to have an unmeetable approach to attract taxi people. Because to me, I'll use this week, not to everybody, to some of the people who were here last week, we like dealing with the labor brokers. People are concerned about their income, who doesn't have anything in their heart about the future of our people. We just look at first that they want how to get money. I'll say it's a certain example. I was also expecting a response from the department today. There was an issue which they've raised in the system of prolonging the period in order to get more infringements. And then after having a lot of those so-called people were affected and taking this matter to court because they know very well that in court they will end up getting free. I thought that would have a response that from our side, the department, how to feel about that situation. Because they don't hide, they tell you straight about their tactics which they use. Then also, I wanted to find out from the department that, you see, as long our systems are not talking to each other, we can have laws and come and everything, forget, because we don't know how we're going to collect this. an example, do you have any capacity to monitor the people who are under that process? And again, with that one, you see, I normally cite an example in Bumalanga, but also how they isolate when they are driving there. There are times where they set the roadblocks, and with the roadblocks, the intention is to get the ticket price. And I'm not sure whether that thing is linked, because some people are running away with it. Presidential, unfortunately, one person who presented last week who said you are just making roadblocks for corruption and name. Why to ask for concern about types of things? Because if Google Sam has a receipt, if there's discipline, all drivers must know that we will misbehave. Also, I was a little concerned, I've heard that from the legal front now. They're going to say something because the majority of the people who are presenting last week, they were concerned around Section 21. That concern was around Section 21 to most of the people. I thought that maybe from the legal community they are going to say something. And, Chairperson, you know, I wanted to make a proposal. Aren't we so fast? I wanted to propose for this proper consultation with our people so that when we start to implement, when we agree, when this is finalized, so that we can be satisfied that we have done proper justice in everybody in the sector. That's what I wanted to suggest from our side. Because this spirit which we are trying to touch is involving a lot of people. You know very well that that field, most of the time, besides the problem of traffic related matters themselves, they do fight. And then lastly, Chairperson, I raised that question earlier on, but let me repeat it this way. You have your idea, James, to do something like that, you have your right for every section. But how are you going to relate with them? Questioning of monitoring and implementation of this. Because we can, you know, I'm scared of what most of the time, like I said, we come up with laws to protect our people. But at the end, it's very difficult to implement. Last example. One of the provinces, in terms of the ethos, sometimes they were the first province as proponents of the ethos, but at the end, they distance themselves. Why is there no proposition? That ethos thing. By then, concerning ethos, I don't mean now. We must avoid such a thing. That's why I'm repeating that we must make sure that our citizens talk to each other.
Thank you very much. Before Honorable Malawuti comes in, if you can just explain what Honorable Sibande, when you say maybe we should go and consult, what do you really mean? What is our anticipation of the whole issue? So that we are all clear that when we agree to that, we get an understanding.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll repeat on what Mama said earlier. That I propose, I know that in terms of the laws and the rules, there are time frames. I do respect that. But I want to suggest that how can we, if we can amend a bit, a period of consultation, like, as I indicated, to try to attract some of these people that are dealing with issues, who are transporting people daily. Because they are the most people that are going to be affected in terms of infringement and the like. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you, Chairperson, and welcome the presentation. My clarity, which I wanted to be aired on, is on slide 7 about the National Quail Tradition Register, the border post for the foreigners. I wanted to know whether our system, the readiness of our system to check those people in our borders. Or I wanted to know, are we going to combine our system, RTS system, with the Home Affairs system, so that every person scan or only the drivers will be entertained to check for the infringement which they committed in the company. The second one is about the department, like other honorable members raised, about the awareness, mostly to the rural areas, because the main intention of this, you want to make a roll over the whole country. So we wanted to know whether, how far, or can the department tell us they went to how far in terms of road shows and awareness, be in print media or electoral media, because it's like dealing only on the developed areas and people with the capacity of nowadays gadgets. But when is this going to be brought to the place, it will seem to see where it would be the first time to hear it. Even maybe find even the officers that are not even aware of that. So we want to know whether the department and the RTA offer with the awareness of this bill or the entire act. And the other, it was raised under the Honorable about the constitutionality explanation, because the JTSA, they make it clear in the presentation that they will go to court and serve this thing because it's unconstitutional. So I think it would be better if we can even get the opinion from the constitutional law experts about this before we jump in, because we don't want to see this delay by challenging from other sectors. So if you can get the opinion from the constitutional law expert to advise us before we implement this. I also want to ask the RP in terms of the expanding their offices capacity, establishment of the offices in the provinces, because you know, the representation is, if the people don't put all the representation to Pretoria, I can't imagine the backlog for the whole country. So when I go to establish the offices in provinces, in regional, or in big metros, so that we find the readiness of rollout of the art throughout the whole country. And actually, it would be good also to get maybe, even if it's a written presentation by Chuan and Jobek, as mentioned by other members here, as they piloted this project, the disadvantage, the challenges they met, how best can we rectify and adjust the challenges to make it proper, so that when we run into the whole country, it doesn't come and hit our face, that we jump the gun before we were ready. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Koyama and Mr. Chu. There were several questions which were put forward. I think members at the same time must consider a proposal by Honorable Masonen that we should consider areas where there were pilot projects to come here, but also consider what Honorable Kunshinga has said in terms of environmental issues which he raised as to what will be our way forward in this too.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, first, there were a few questions. I have to reply. They were quite brilliant. I'll touch on a few ones that were talking to the department. But more technical ones, we have a team from the agency, but also the areas, so that we're able to deal with those issues. But yeah, let me just start with the issue around the pilot, the role of Joburg and Swanee. My own understanding is that Joburg did provide a written submission, although it was just a paragraph. But we are here in Parliament. We are, this is the committee's process. The committee called for comments and inputs from stakeholders. And the committee received, the committee invited stakeholders, that those that came. But I think it is still again within the committee. The committee believes that it is not concerned wide enough to still do that. We do that every time in this country. If we feel that the response we got, did not necessarily penetrate wide enough, we go for the second, even for the third time. So I want to believe, one, that the community can call anybody to come and make input if they feel left out. We, the colleagues, will deal with the experiences in Swanee and Joburg, but again, the community can still call Swanee and Joburg to get their side of the story anytime. We will always be available to come and take notes and respond, like we did last week. I just wanted to raise that one very clear. But also, the fact that when we deal with amendments, it is at the forum like this, it's inevitable that we cannot talk to the Act. But it helps that process, because there are therefore then other things that you might even have overlooked ourselves, which can be factored in. To an extent that it does not change materially the bill as presented, those things are always allowed. But that's not mean that it cannot change material, but if it does that, we need to go back to government, and do those cabinet processes again. But we can touch, go to any part of the principal act and express a view on it. And we have that responsibility to then clarify those issues. That's why when we prepare beyond the amendment. But yes, we also then I tell the committee, if this is not an amendment, but if all material stages we attempt to then address those. All of this issue about the constitutionality of the whole act and everything else, we could have said they are not part of the amendment, but we cannot say that, because like I said, the committee can come with, we can come here with this thing, proposals. We can live with an act this thing, or we can live with fewer pages, couple of pages. So the committee can add, can take out, but at the end, the custodian of legislating rests with legislators. I just wanted to be that very clear. Now, I've marked those that are easy, I've marked those that are easy, and then the colleagues will deal with the difficult ones. I want to believe that, of course, the issue around fighting is not only for students, but all over. I think when Honorable Masonga was indicating the challenges in Polokwane, I was trying to visualize any other courts in this country where there is ample space. There are very few, if any, for some reason. But I do not necessarily disagree. I want to indicate that perhaps that is the whole issue and question of integrating land use and transportation planning. It's far wider than the issue of parking base in and around courts and schools. But I think this thing also then reminds me of the most important element of the purpose of this act. And this question was, I'm not a politician, but maybe I would deal with the issue around what are the politics of this in this manner. Look, for us, it is very clear. The main intention was to simplify issues dealing with traffic fines, for lack of a better word. Now, the act tries to avoid going to court, getting into this expensive process, and so on. So if you have options of making representation earlier, of taking advantage of discounts and so on, you will avoid going to court. For me, that is the politics behind the whole thing. We wanted to take out minor infringements out of the justice system and into an administrative system. In the main, if you look at the main attempts where the court is the last resort in matters of this nature. But the police will unpack that one further. The importance of SARA cannot be overemphasized. We are so fortunate as the Department of Transport that that energetic gentleman you talk about from Canada was actually trained by us. He came from the department. Yeah. He worked with me in transport plan. So we are so fortunate that not only do we call SARA at formal workshops and lectures. And we engage with SARA on a daily, on an almost regular basis, formal and informal, so because of the relationship we have with the transport section of SARA, headed by Jubilee and Jojo. So he comes from he was actually one of those that were working on the network for years, until he went for Salada. And we very much are very proud in terms of the work that he does. So at the level of Salada, I'm very comfortable that we have been through with them, even in the development, not only talking and discussing the sort of final draft of the work. And then there's also an issue, I don't know how can we deal with avoid constitutional challenges. I think it is concerning that there will be those that would even present for challenges. But I think we can take comfort from the state law advisors. The main issue, and I'm not looking for them, they will respond. That they said, and we also request and want to check. That we don't fall foul of the Constitution in the main area. But I think the mandate around even the principal has gone beyond the brief, because we were all prepared for the amendments. I don't think that there is anything wrong. Our plea is that this does not necessarily affect or delay the amendments, but we can, as we normally do with any action that we do. We do get a legal opinion, we can even get a declaratory order in court to test the legal opinion on the matter. So perhaps this is one area that we can start that process. It's a slightly longer process. But if that is the real concern, it's something that we can start that process. So that we don't wait for somebody to challenge us or say that's the constitutional cause. We ourselves proactively test the constitutionality thereof. If really the input by the state law advisors needs to be augmented. But this morning one was quite comfortable that we are on the right side of the decision. I don't know Mr. Stewart and the team to deal with the other businesses.
Through you, Chairperson. Thank you, Acting DG. Chairperson, we are going to be very generous in sharing the expertise that is resident among this high-powered team. And if there's any other thing that would not have been addressed, I will come at the end of it to be able to address it. I introduce Advocate Belikwani, Advocate Mbigashe, Advocate Masumbuka, Advocate Weta, Mr. John Mozarting, and Mr. Thabo Sulesane. There's a lot of an advocate. No, is not an advocate. There's a lot of questions that have been asked, so they're sufficient in number and in terms of their expertise to be able to deal with all these other issues. If there's anything that would have been left behind, then I will come at the end to be able to deal with it. Let me just start with an interesting observation also. Perhaps something that goes on to the issues that were raised by Honorable Maswanga. Yes, indeed, the issues related to the pilot, Mr. Zulazan will be able to cover it. There's also an interesting element that goes on to the caution that you place in whether the provision of the Art of Framework is overly draconian in terms of that. And from the example that one would give relating to financial penalties or to the demerit point system and the provision for community service, we had given serious consideration to all these other aspects. And also, one would find that there is nothing unreasonable in terms of it, because there would be issues that may point one to what is termed the principle of double jeopardy, in the sense that you punish one person in this form and also viewed as secondary punishment, either by financial penalties or additional ones. We recognize that as a country we're working in terms of Roman Dutch law and how it has actually transpired. And the principle of double jeopardy is nothing but an importation of American jurisprudence, which is not applicable in our country. And here there is absolutely nothing wrong, and there is nothing draconian in terms of what we're providing. That's why magistrates and judges have got the right that when they pronounce the verdict, they might be able to penalize somebody with a financial penalty as well as, in addition, incarceration in court or any other thing. The proposal that would have been made here would be the one that would make provision in respect of that. And if I take the members to the example that we've made, in the general scheme of things, we're saying constitutionally the imperative that we're facing is that sanctity of life must be preeminent in all that we're doing, and which is the protection that comes out from the Constitution. And therefore, the penal measures that we are implementing have got to be the one that has got the outcome of the increase in terms of the road safety that we want, to provide that service of assurance to anybody else seeking to enjoy the use and benefit of our road infrastructure network. Nonetheless, the details in respect of a number of other issues, starting with the detailed question I've noted about nine that Honorable Hamsinga had also mentioned, and from the nine that we had, there are three, there's four, that Honorable De Freitas had also mentioned, and then Mr. Sulatana will probably be able to start with all this. I've noted all of them, and if there's nothing that has not been answered, then I will come in here.
Before Mr. Sulatana starts, Honorable Members, we are aware that we are behind in terms of time. I don't know if we're going to push it up until 4:21, if it's agreeable, but remember that we are still continuing tomorrow and Thursday. On this matter, so basically maybe they can just answer a few questions around 2:30 to 2:30. We take a break so that we can be able to prepare to go to Parliament today. Already somebody in a hush to go and
help over what
we call it. We are still at the
I can't wait.
I was making a proposal that maybe Akia package everything, and then tomorrow first thing they answer all the questions, and then we're able to proceed. Or we put ourselves up until quarter to one, then this will be rushing for lunch, while they will be responding, the remainder of the questions will be analyzed tomorrow. I just want to hear from you, honorable members, how do we break now, or 15 minutes from now, the choice is ours. Honorable Rasa.
It's now almost half past 12. I don't know the value of the 15 minutes on 33 questions. If you look at it in terms of the value, I'd wonder whether it's not better, even for a team, to put a proper, considered response on paper. I'm thinking that's probably the best. Thanks, Chair.
The proposal is that we take a break so that the red overall can go and lay his overall to Parliament.
Thank you, Chair.
For the afternoon. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for making the agenda for tomorrow.
And the good. I want to know whether it is method of payment. I don't know. We have seen
one.
Tell us.